Some people think that our heart is our most vital organ. Actually, it's not. Our brain is. Our mind is a maze, a labyrinth of experiences from birth that creates the reality we live. God designed us to thrive on earth with joy through human interaction and relationships that shape and mold us. But what happens when those interactions break us and shatter the hope and the innocence we once held? How do we find our way home? How do we pick up the pieces? Can we ever be made new? There is hope for the brokenhearted because our Savior and Creator designed us to repair. We just need to be shown the way. Join us on a journey as we learn how to take Jesus to our past, restore what was lost, and bring healing to the fractured soul.
That is not good.
There we go. I think we're good. Oh my gosh, this thing is Herkimer. Hey guys, welcome back to Resistance Chicks. We're your hosts, Leah and Michelle. Leah will be joining us shortly. We're going to get into a super fascinating topic tonight. I know that over the last several weeks, we have been, well, I don't know, like the past couple of months, right? We've been digging into different personality disorders. No. Hang on. So to be clear, when we're talking about narcissism, schizophrenia, bipolar, psychopathy, borderline personality disorder. It's super frustrating when we're talking about different like psychological phrases, because they like to put things in different categories and they'll say, well, this is a personality disorder, this is a mental illness, and so on and so forth. Guys, we're using terms as best that we can, but I don't want you to get stuck on them. I'm going to use them the way that we understand them, the way that I think the layman understands them, versus getting caught up on all of the ins and outs and the semantics of the phrasing. The reason why the phrasing is helpful is so that people can follow along and be, you know, kind of on the same track of understanding things. So when I say a personality disorder, so there's mental illnesses and then there's personality disorders. And they kind of overlap, but they try to tell you that they don't. And I don't know. It's kind of like I have found that the study of psychology is a lot like beekeeping, meaning you could talk to 100 different beekeepers on the same exact subject and you will get 100 different answers. Okay, for what that means to them. Like Jordan Peterson is supposed to be an authority on things, and he and I totally disagree on borderline personality disorder that we spent the last 2 weeks talking about. So anyway, narcissism is a mental illness. It is absolutely a mental illness. I also call it a personality disorder. So, and they do too, because it's literally called NPD. Narcissist personality disorder. It is also a mental illness. Now, I loved what Leah said here. I'm going to read her intro and then I'm going to do my own thing until she gets here, because I have a lot of thoughts on this. Leah says, everyone is a little narcissistic. In fact, we call the healthy form of narcissism self-esteem. If you are injured or in pain, you will often exhibit unhealthy narcissistic tendencies as a self-protective measure. She stole that from me. I gave that to her while she was writing her description. Narcissism is characterized by an inflated sense of self-importance, often paired with a lack of self-awareness and empathy for others. People with narcissistic personality disorder, NPD, may struggle to maintain healthy personal and professional relationships because they often overlook or underestimate how their behavior affects others. Tonight, we want to focus on ourselves for a good cause, how each of us can identify areas in which we can work on to be healthy and balanced when viewing ourselves and how we see and relate to others' needs and pains. This is the essence of Christianity and what Jesus wanted to teach his disciples. The greatest amongst you must be the servant of all, and the last shall be first, and the first shall be last. How do we serve others and still maintain self-confidence or self-esteem? And how can we heal from trauma that has made self-focus necessary for survival? Now that gets into what I was talking to Leah about before the show, which I want to share with you guys now. There has been, if you guys have been doing this, maybe you have been becoming more fascinated on this subject because of Healing for the Fractured Soul, and you've been digging into all of these YouTube videos on all of these different, what I'm calling personality disorders, AKA mental illnesses. I'm fascinated by it. The internet has both made me very encouraged and also very disappointed in this subject. And what I mean by that is they leave you hopeless when it comes to psychopathy, psychopaths, and narcissism and narcissists. They will pretty much tell you there is no help and no hope for these people. Now, you and I, we're Christians, and we read about the demoniac in the Bible. We are legion, and we know that there is nobody that God can't save. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to accept him, but there's nobody that's beyond God's redeeming power, okay? And so this idea that you just can't help narcissists and you just can't help psychopaths is ridiculous. And Leah comes to me today, and she's like, Michelle, I found a guy. I finally found a guy. And maybe she's going to tell you guys about him tonight. Maybe she's going to play videos with him. I don't know. But she's like, there is hope, and he's been successfully treating narcissists. Now, of course, that person needs to seek help. Like, they need to want help. And Leah's going to get into this tonight. Because I said to her, I was like, so these, because I said the same thing. I was like, they have to actually want to get help, right? And Leah's like, you would be surprised at, and this is what this guy says, at how many narcissists come to him because their lives are falling apart and they do need help. They need mental help. And if their life is falling apart enough, they are willing to do whatever it takes. And there is hope for them, right? They can see their way out of it, because as we're going to emphasize, and Leah's going to emphasize in this tonight, that narcissism, and there's at least three types of narcissism, or three main types that we'll get into, and we've been getting into. The malignant one is a little bit more difficult. That's closer to psychopathy, the kind of dangerous, violent type person. But the kind of one that most of us are used to dealing with, the person that just has zero self-awareness, that they're always focused on themselves, that they're always talking about themselves, they just don't know. And you know that they quote unquote mean well, but they're completely clueless. Those people definitely can be helped, even though the internet will tell you that they cannot. But she said this, and I love this, and we're going to keep reiterating it, that a lot of times narcissism is self-protection from borderline personality disorder, which we spent the last 2 weeks focusing on. It's kind of what everybody has. If you've ever lost it in an argument, you probably have some form of borderline personality disorder tendencies, okay? Where you come outside of yourself and you lose it, okay? But you don't want to do that. Nobody wants to do that. So if you are that dysfunctional with borderline personality disorder, a lot of times you will develop narcissism, because what it does is it shuts off everybody and you just become insular at that point. And so if certain forms, and a good portion of them, of narcissism is just self-protection against borderline personality disorder, we're talking about another thing. This can be helped. These people aren't born this way. Okay, life created them this way. And so I wanted to emphasize here tonight, I've been talking about, I am so fascinated by schizophrenia, because I think that I almost succumbed to it. Thank God my family and Leah were there. But I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that twice in my life, I went into that prodromal phase, that's what they call it, where you go into this kind of depression, because stress in your life is so, so high. And I'm going to correlate this and relate this to narcissism in a second, is so high that your cortisol levels go through the roof, and your body, with a self-protection, remember that, write that down, self-protection shuts everything down. The whole system just says, offline, there's not enough oxygen in the room, we're not producing anything anymore. And then that's when a lot of people, they just feel like they just want to die. They can't function. They can't move. They're just like on a couch. They're a zombie. This gets misdiagnosed often as depression. Well, of course, yeah, it's a form of depression. But if you can catch somebody in that prodromal phase before it just continues, you can stop them. That's what happened to me, from actually developing schizophrenia. Praise the Lord. Because you have to turn the system back on, and you have to tell the system it's okay. We're going to lower the stress. We're going to lower the stressors in life, in your body. We're going to lessen the cortisol. We're going to do a system hormonal flush. That is when I developed, and this is not a plug for this. This is a story behind the healing for the soul. I developed this, or God gave me the recipe for this, and I started using it. I mean, I was putting it on multiple times a day. I would just carry it in my pocket and I could just feel it. Like, there was something to that. And there's a resonance in essential oils, which makes sense why even holding it is helpful. And I would just put it on throughout the day. And what it was doing is it was lowering the cortisol. It was balancing the hormones, because the hormones just completely turned off. Here's why I'm focusing on that. Because I believe that something very similar happens to borderline personality victims, patients, whatever you want to call them. And then they develop narcissism, because the system just says, you know what? Shutting it down. I'll focus on me, myself, and mine. That's it. And not even mine, because that would include your family. Just me and myself, okay? And then it's a survival. It's a survival instinct. And so that's what we're going to get into tonight, because if that's how it develops, we can fix it. God can fix it. And Matt said something really interesting in the car, because Leah was like, so what would you say to, somebody that, you know, had these, you know, narcissistic tendencies, and they, you know, to get them help or whatever. And he's like, Jesus, which is so great. And that is the answer. And Jesus is always, 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 always the answer. So that's step number one. And I know for a fact that there are people who have gotten set free from narcissistic personality disorder at the instant that they get saved. I've seen it.
Yeah.
Okay. I have seen it. It's called instant deliverance.
Yeah.
The problem is, what do you do if you develop this after you're already saved? And you need to have, quote unquote, another come to Jesus moment, but you also have to work through the healing process. So yes, there's instant healing, which happens. Maybe you've got a broken bone and boom, God instantly heals it. Or you have to allow God to take you to the doctor and you get it cast and you,
well, I'm going to say it's never going to develop after you get saved. It's definitely baked into your childhood.
I want to disagree with you on this, because I think that I am going to right out the gate totally disagree with Leah on this, because I have seen this. Quote, it depends on your definition of being saved, right? Are you talking once saved, always saved? Because if you're in the once saved, always saved, then my definition will definitely apply here. Okay, you got saved, but life goes crazy. Maybe you have, a really bad marriage of 10, 15 years, whatever it is that happens. I don't think that narcissism only develops because maybe they're the roots of it are laid.
So
the foundation of it is laid in your childhood, but I think it can definitely, as a survival thing, like I was talking about, I was telling them, I think that this happens very similarly like schizophrenia, but not tied to your, teens, 20s, 30s. I think it can happen at any point where it's the borderline personality disorder, which would go back to your childhood, becomes too much. And then you develop this narcissism as a protectiveness against that. So my point is, I think that this really can develop at any time in your life, or I should say, start expressing itself.
That's what I was...
At any time in your life. Well, I wasn't done with my monologue yet.
Okay.
You just so happened to show up.
Okay.
You can do the rest of the show, because you always do. You got to learn to jump in and jump rope with where Michelle's going. You still lost your earbud?
Yeah, I'll find it.
Okay. Now I forget where I was going with that. But my point in everything that I'm saying here is, regardless of when it develops, regardless of when this comes on, okay, we have this idea that in modern psychology, that this is something that can't be fixed, that kind of once you have it, just brush these people to the side because they will never get help. They'll never want help. So God can, yes, instantaneously heal you. But a lot of times, just as with any form of illness in your body, God will take you through healing, the healing process. And I think that as Christians, sometimes we want so badly to have that instantaneous healing that we don't want to do the work that the healing process takes. I'm so proud of you guys for tuning into the Healing for the Fractured Soul, because what that means is you are willing to do the work. And that's what any of these psychologists will tell you, Christian or otherwise. You have to be willing to do the work. It's with any healing at all. If you're not willing to do the work. Now, when I say willing to do the work, I'm not talking about working out. I'm not even talking about taking supplements, although that is kind of part of it. You have to be willing to face the deepest, darkest, most painful, most insecure, most ugly parts of yourselves and have a radical acceptance that they exist first and foremost, and then be willing to allow God to heal it and allow God to take you through the healing process. So this is the last thing I'm going to say, and then I'm going to toss the Leah show back over to her. Thank you for coming to your show. Tonight really is where I want to emphasize that phrase that we've been talking about, which has really set me free, which is radical acceptance. You know, when we're talking about doing tonight's show, it's kind of like, well, who would admit that they were a narcissist? I think a lot of you that are tuning into our show. And all that means is, like I was saying, it's a self-preservation that the body does, which shuts off emotion and care towards other people and focus on other people, because just to survive, all you can do is focus on yourself. And so if you're tuning in and you're like, you know what? I really do struggle caring about other people. I really do struggle thinking about other people. And all of my problems are really the only thing that I can think about. Okay. If that is you, congratulations. That's step one. Radical acceptance that this may have happened to you, that you may be suffering from some form of NPD. And we have answers for you, and God has answers for you. And I don't want you to be left hopeless if you've ever tried to look this up on the internet and pretty much everybody tells you we don't have answers for you. And what I mean by that is, how do you turn empathy back on in somebody? First of all, Jesus, number one, like Matt said. But second of all, there are actually things that you can do, processes. Leah's got some healing techniques, but also, this is not something that, like, if somebody tells you you'll never walk again, you really will never walk again. You will walk again. You will have your empathy turned back on again. You will have your compassion turned back on. You will have your care for other people turned back on, especially if you are willing to surrender everything and your pride and all the things to God, which I know that if you're tuning into this show, that is you. So congratulations, you're here. There is hope for you. So Leah, take away. Is estrangement kind of the same?
What do you mean by estrangement?
That's a very good question.
Can you elaborate that?
Estrangement from who? Whom? Yourself, family members?
So I think that when I'm talking about narcissism, I want tonight for all of us to do something that we don't normally do. And I want you to come at this episode with the idea that you have narcissistic tendencies. I want you, every single one of you, to look inwardly tonight. I know this is like, why would every single episode on the internet on narcissism is how bad they are to you, how horrible they are, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to tell you, probably half of the people making videos on narcissists are narcissists.
Okay, I was going to say that. Can I just throw this in just real quick? You said this in the car, so I'm actually only saying something that you probably were going to say later on the show. I'm going to steal your punchline if you were going to, okay? You have to be very, very careful when you are trying to identify narcissists in your life that you aren't becoming one. And this is a huge thing that happened. If you've been abused and you've been abused by a narcissist, you probably, if all you can do is talk about that, if all you can do is focus on it, if their abuse to you becomes your identity, I don't want to say congratulations, uncongratulations, you are now a narcissist. And this happens to a lot of people that have been abused. And why? That goes back to the phrase that I used earlier that I gave to Leah. You're welcome. I contributed one thing to this show, which you were probably going to use anyway, but let me have it. Self-preservation. It's a self-preservation tactic. So if you've been abused by a narcissist and it was all about them and your focus was all about them for years and they hurt you, then as a self-preservation, you just become, now it's all about me and I'm gonna rip what you did to shreds and you're just this terrible, awful person. And now it becomes your complete and utter identity, what they did to you. And all you can do is tell other people, they did this to me. And this was so, guys, you need to be set free from that too. Okay, because God doesn't want that to be your identity. Take a cue from Leah and I. We did 7 episodes on SK and we mention it every once in a while. We really don't think about it much at all since, and until it applies. And then I go, wow, this is so fascinating. But it's not my identity. What happened? It's not. I'm not obsessed like, oh, this guy did this thing and it was so terrible. But for most people, it becomes their, and I'm glad you said that, their identity. And that's that, you now have become a narcissist. I don't mean to chuckle about it, but it's part of the cycle, unfortunately. And I think it's part demonic.
Yeah, sure. It certainly is. And some of you may say, well, I'm a good narcissist because I'm focusing on myself and I don't want to hurt anyone. And this person doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Good witch, bad witch, still a witch. Stop witchcraft.
Amen.
Good narcissism. There is a form of healthy narcissism, and we're going to talk about that. I want to read to you.
But it's not really narcissism.
My intro today. Some people think about themselves all the time because they're in pain. Maybe you have neuropathy. Maybe you've got back pain. Maybe you've got cancer. You're thinking about yourself all the time because your body is making you think about yourself.
You used me as an example
and
earlier.
And you can't get yourself out of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of grace for that. But it's true. But your pain has made you self-focused. Some people become narcissism and they feed off of the praise, admiration of others. And when they don't have it, it becomes a pain to them. And so they will seek it out because it's like a high, it's a hit for them. Narcissists, narcissism leave a trail of broken or just underappreciated people.
That's really
their
good.
Wake.
Wow, like pastors.
Some people may not see themselves as actually being hurt or traumatized, just not appreciated.
That's good.
You know, not valued. So okay. So whatever it is, whenever we are acting in a narcissistic way, an unhealthy narcissistic way, then there are people around us that are going to suffer the consequences. So that's why this is important that we identify it in ourselves. Yes, it's important to identify in others, and we've done episodes on that. Tonight, I know, I feel the people dropping off.
I know they're going to stay.
I don't want to focus on myself. What is this? What is this show you're talking about? I'm a victim. It's never my fault. If you can stay through it and you can work on yourself, then I feel like I want to give you a prize. Because there's not many out there that do. And that's why narcissists are hard to change. So whether it's a spouse you've had, maybe a boss, maybe a teacher, maybe a coach, maybe a family member, there are people in your life that have left you feeling underappreciated or undervalued or even, you know, have really affected your self-esteem and how you view yourself. So much so that you may develop narcissistic tendencies so that you can function at a high level in society. Narcissism actually helps people compartmentalize their pain or their low self-esteem.
That's good.
And function at a higher level than those who have the borderline personality, which we talked about, or the bipolar disorder. In fact, narcissists tend to live in a world of relative personal stability.
Mm.
However, their relationships can and are often rocky, which they see as always the other person's fault. Narcissism actually puts the blame on the other person, so the narcissist does not have to feel the pain of rejection if that person leaves you, or self-reflection if that person starts to say, hey, this is hurting me. That's painful for a narcissist. So they will turn it off. They will push you away. They will gaslight you. They will ping pong back anything you put at them back on that other person because the pain of receiving it is too great. Now, I wanted to hold up a Bible. I have a Bible, and I want to say there's this, the title of the show is How Not to Be a Narcissist, and hold up the Bible. Because the entire Bible, the message is how to heal from being hurt and how to not be a narcissist, how to not be selfish. And I had so many biblical storylines come to mind. Okay. David was a narcissist when he found Bathsheba. And then she got pregnant. And then he was a narcissist thinking only about himself when he put Bathsheba's husband to the front line and he died. Mm-hmm. Like I said, when you're acting in a narcissistic way, there are a wake of hurt people around you. Okay. Interestingly, the disciples tended to all back and forth. You can see kind of operate here and there in narcissistic tendencies. And Jesus was constantly trying to help them out. So you had, was it James and Jambres, I think, or the Sons of Thunder.
It's James and John.
James and just James and John. The Sons of Thunder. And their mom. You want to tell the story?
God love their mom. I think she's, I mean, honestly, you got the Messiah there, okay? And mama always looking out for hers, okay? You know what I'm saying? This is a good mother. This is a good mother, like, hey, Jesus, now let's talk. Who's going to be sitting on your right and your left hand in the kingdom? Okay? Because I think that my two sons are perfect candidates. And Jesus is brilliant in his response here. Listen, that's not for me to decide. Okay? Like, he totally sidesteps that one. Like, dude, not for me to decide. I think there was a little bit more to it than that, but I like humanizing it a little bit that way. I think there
was. And he said, if you want to come with me in my kingdom, you're going to have to go the way I go.
The greatest amongst you must be the servant of all.
Oh, well, I was going to say, it actually says they're going to die, that you're going to die. You're going to die the death. Yeah. You're going to die. Like, you're physically going to die.
Yeah.
That Jesus coming.
Can you drink from this cup that I can drink of? And the disciples are like, give me the cup, man. I'm drinking from your cup. Of course I can drink from your cup. Give me the cup. And he's like, no, okay. You're going to drink from the cup.
You're
going to
drink.
You are going to drink from this cup. And he was saying, he was talking about them dying. Okay, yeah. He hasn't taken a sip of something.
Yeah, and then Peter, you know, he jumps in when Jesus is, you know, basically saying, I'm going to have to die for this. And Jesus and Peter's like, not so, Lord. And Jesus says, get thee behind me, Satan. You know what you're talking about.
And Peter's like, I will follow you anywhere. I will do anything. I will defend you to the death. There is nothing that could, oh, wait a minute.
And then Jesus says to Peter, you're going to deny me three times.
Yeah.
And he did. And that was another narcissistic tendency on Peter's.
Yeah.
On Peter's fault there. And all these disciples who thought that there was going to be a real legitimate kingdom, like a real physical one on earth, and that they were going to rule and reign in that. Again, narcissistic tendencies. So when Jesus is coming, when he does the foot washing thing with nasty, dirty, you know, I really want you guys to go out in a garden in dirt with gym shoes on and then come and do the foot washing Jesus thing, okay? Because then they need it. I need it. I have to wash my feet every time I go into the garden if I'm not wearing rubber boots.
I do not ever want to wash your feet for you.
Okay, that's fine.
Don't want to do it.
So it's the lowliest position in the household. You normally have a servant that will wash your feet because it's really dusty. Everybody's wearing sandals. And so Peter, again, narcissist just... all around, poor Peter. Jesus says, here, let me show you what it means to be great in the kingdom of God. So he has Peter sit down, he washes his feet. He goes, well, Jesus, just wash my whole body after that. And he goes, no. Your feet are enough. Peter, stop. You're going overboard. Just Peter was always overboard, right? In a narcissistic tendency.
Can I insert something on this modern thing? I would like to put a complete and utter stop to the modern day foot washing. And I will tell you why. Because actually it's more humbling and humiliating for the person getting their feet washed. yeah. than what you intend it to be. So we need some sort of equivalent that the pastor can do with the parishioner that would equate
something that would actually humble
okay,
the pastor.
That would actually humble the pastor, because whenever anybody asks me to wash my feet, I'd be like, please, that is just too embarrassing. It's yeah. too humiliating to me. That is putting me in a very humble place, and that is the opposite of what you are trying to show me, okay? So we just need to put a chutzpah on this foot washing thing that y'all think, okay, because we don't have that culture here. We need something in our culture that speaks to our souls besides you humiliating me and having a pastor touch my feet, man.
Maybe come over to your house and take your trash out.
Yeah, that for sure. Like 1,000%. Come and clean my bathroom, which actually yeah. that might be in the same category too. Something that's not going to embarrass me.
How about your car?
Wash the car. Yeah, anything other than please. Can we please tell your pastors that Michelle said, I don't think any pastor has really given this a lot of thought. Continue.
Okay, yeah. So we want to be humble. There's a lot of situations in the Bible and a lot of teachings in the New Testament, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you up. God resists the proud, the narcissist, but gives grace to the humble.
When you're invited to a feast or any kind of gathering, don't go and sit up front.
Don't
go
be
sit
a narcissist.
In the back, because if you can't be called, you can be told to go to the back, but you can't be called to come to the front.
Exactly. Jesus warning. He's warning you actually don't embarrass yourself.
I think I said that
yourself.
Backwards, but y'all got it.
Jesus is actually telling you is teaching us how not to embarrass ourselves yeah. as well. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're going to a mega rally, don't go and ask for them to, you know, announce that you're there. Stay in the back. And if you get brought to the front, that's great. If not, you haven't been embarrassed.
Which is why I can prove to you the real deal people in the podcasting world and the non-real deal. But we are blessed to teach. And I know I call him out a lot, but he's been to every single Clay Clark event and he always is the person sitting in the back, but he's got a giant following. He should have been brought to the front, which eventually he was. Okay. Most humble man in the whole Reawaken tour. Mm. Hands down, bar none. Rick from Blessed to Teach.
It doesn't mean that if you don't have some answers that you don't give them and just knock on some doors and say, I think I have some answers. I think you need to hear what I would say. But again, you can do so from a humble way.
Almost every speaker at the Reawaken Tour is a narcissist. Almost every single one.
Be careful.
And I love them, mm-hmm. but they need a little
and we do. We all
healing
need,
for the fractured soul.
We do. And we all need some healing for the fractured soul. We all need to reflect on the narcissism that is within. The narcissist within is probably another good title. So not all narcissism will stem from abuse. But a borderline personality is not as self-protective. And that's why you'll see a borderline personality is more likely to cut, more likely to commit suicide.
Mm.
And then a narcissist, because the narcissist has turned off those, or muted, you should say, those self
deprecating
words. And when a narcissist actually makes it into therapy, it's because something in their life has gone terribly wrong and they want to fix what's gone wrong in their life. And for many therapists, it's really kind of a difficult journey to help a narcissist to awaken, because if they have been hurt or wronged, and really wronged or really hurt, it's going to be really hard to walk that hurt lion through the fact that they need to let go of their own self-preservation.
Mm.
And that the self-preservation techniques are actually harming other innocent people around you, that you are a roaring lion and you're hammering other people. You're biting other people, maybe your kids. If your spouse walked out on you and left you, and now you're just a jumble of anxiety and hurt, then your kids are getting the brunt of that. And you have become a narcissist in your pain. And so we want to heal the pain. And at the base of narcissism are two causes, okay? One will be kind of like a trauma-based, and the other is almost like a spoiling, and both are both have negative consequences. Not all narcissism stems from abuse. Some children are overfed praise. Some are given the world. There are different ways to treat each kinds of narcissism, okay? Narcissism stems from a complex mix of genetics. Have you ever seen a baby? Some babies are more fussy than others. Mm. You are born, each person is born with kind of predisposed personality, but narcissists aren't born. They're made, okay? The Bible says to spare the rod, spoil the child, which means if you don't raise a child with proper discipline, you're going to create a narcissist. It's biblical. Everything in the Bible is about narcissism. It's about selfishness. It's about pride. It's about arrogance. It's about putting yourself first. Like, it's about finding that humble place. Okay, that's the whole point. Jesus came when he's saying, the greatest amongst you is a servant of all. Follow me, become my disciple. He says to the rich young ruler who comes, and the rich young ruler's done all the right things. He's kept all the commandments. He's kept the law. He's been sinless. And Jesus says, one thing that you have that you're lacking. The rich young ruler says, what can I do to enter into your kingdom? He says, you lack one thing. You've done everything well. You lack thing. Go sell all you have and get to the poor. What's very interesting about that rich young ruler is at that moment, he could not get saved. He could not receive salvation. He, at that moment, did not enter the kingdom, because what Jesus was saying is that until you die to yourself and give up the things, your narcissistic self-esteem. Mm. So the rich young ruler, his self-esteem
and value worth
and value was tied to his money
and possessions.
So when
clearly
Jesus,
his possessions, because he said, let's go sell them.
Well, that's what I meant. Yeah, his wealth. So when Jesus is saying to him, you want to enter into the kingdom, you want to get saved, you have to divest yourself.
That's a good word.
Of anything that gives you value from the outside world. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that everybody who gets saved has to go and sell all that they have. It means that if your self-worth and your value is tied to that, like I created this business, I did this, I did that, you have to divest yourself of your pride and arrogance tied to that business.
Well, Paul tells you the only things that you can boast in, right? He goes through the different things, the sacrifices that he made for Christ, but that's it, really.
Yeah, he says, the only thing I boast in is what I've given up for Christ, what I've done, because anything else is a loss. This is a Christianity that is not preached, because then if you don't have rich people in the pews, they can't get big tithes and you don't have vacation. It preaches actually in sub-Saharan Africa when they're like, yeah, I don't have anything, it's great, let's go to Jesus. And actually there are a lot of scriptures that say it's better and easier to come into the kingdom without riches and wealth.
Come on.
Than it is with riches and wealth, because you have to be willing to give at any given moment. You have to be willing to be without it.
To lose everything.
You have to be willing to. And if you ever say, well, I'll come to Jesus, but he would never ask me to give everything up, or I'm not willing to, you've not given your life to Jesus. And the idea of just saying, Jesus, forgive me of my sins, without actually repenting of the sins of pride and arrogance and self aggrandizement, how do you say that word?
Aggrandizement. Yeah,
Right. Then that you haven't repented, and salvation depends on repentance, not just Jesus' sacrifice for sin. So narcissism stems from a complex mix of genetics, brain differences, particularly early childhood experiences like abuse, neglect, excessive criticism, or conversely, an overindulgence. If you've ever seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, it's basically
I want it now.
An allegory of narcissistic children with
violent,
only
you're turning violent.
With only Charlie being the one that is not the narcissistic kid, and then it's even kind of pulled out of him in the end. It was like, it's basically a Willy Wonka's kids. Was the
you've ruined me for the whole show.
It was basically a fun factory to pull out narcissistic kids, because Willy Wonka, he like kind of hated kids. They thought but that he was all
trying
selfish.
To find
a nice, if a kind he can child.
Find one to pass on the whole chocolate factory.
You're turning violent, Violet. You know, you're going to blow up. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So that's
such a creepy movie.
It is. Don't watch it. It's horrible.
I want to add one thing to this since yours is written down.
So the overindulgence creates narcissism. Everybody knows that overindulging and spoiling a child.
There's one more category that I would not know of if it weren't for my best friend, Catherine. And that is nutritional deficiencies. She had colic as a baby because she was nutritionally just deficient. They couldn't figure out what was going on with her. She was born nutritionally deficient because her mom had this specific blood thing with her dad, and it's a long story. But the point is that she suffered until like junior high before they figured out what was wrong with her. Just like she was one of those failure to thrive. Like if she had been the runt of the litter, she'd have died. Okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like that was her. And so her system developed from infancy till junior high with just complete survival mode. I need to, something needs to take care of me. This is, something is wrong. Something is broken. And she will tell you to this day that she has had to work very hard nutritionally and spiritually, mentally, emotionally to be able to turn her emotions back on. Now, she wasn't so much narcissistic in the way that we're talking about tonight, that she was super obsessed with herself and loved herself.
But she could only concentrate on her own needs.
Right. But she also couldn't feel, not even for herself, not for her emotions were just completely turned off. And she'll even tell you to this day, if things get out of whack, then her emotions start to turn off again. And so for some people, it's not just genetic as much as it is. And she was over-vaccinated. Right? Those types of things. So that's when Lee and I keep telling you, we're going to bring the full frontal approach to all of this. We're going to bring you everything that every tool in our arsenal that we can to explain these things. So maybe you know somebody who was one of those and you'll see them. They're the skinny, scrawny, you know what I mean? Type kids. They just look like they could use nutritional
and
help.
That would be a self-focused issue oftentimes until that's balanced. So with all of these, whether it's overindulgence or criticism, anything that creates an unstable environment where love is conditional, fostering deep-seated insecurity masked by grandiosity or entitlement, while there's no single cause, a combination of genetic predisposition and dysfunctional family dynamics, including inconsistent parenting or trauma, are key risk factors. Now, I found something that I thought was very interesting. In researching for tonight, I asked Google something.
Like Google AI?
And I said, listen. We all know that Donald Trump is a narcissist. So from the stories that I've heard of Donald Trump, he had a loving childhood. So how do you get a narcissist from a loving childhood? Turns out he didn't have a loving childhood. And I said to myself, oh my gosh, Trump is in that same category of his mom got really sick when he was 2.5.
Wow.
And she was not able to be his mother.
Wow.
And so his father took over. Now, I spent a decent amount of time trying to corroborate the information. I would never take straight up information from Donald Trump's psychotherapist, psychologist niece, Mary Trump, just because when the book came out, it seemed like it was a hit piece. And so I just didn't look into any of the allegations in it because I was like, well, I can see that he's a narcissist, but you're probably not telling the truth either. So I just ignored it. And then I started to look into Fred Trump and the things that I could find that were actually factual. So we all know that Donald Trump is a narcissist. Let's not beat around the bush. He is the most
quintessential,
grandiose narcissist that the world has ever been able to pin a finger on to the actual diagnosis of it. Where he's probably just attracted to himself. He has all these women, okay? However, what did we learn from the really cool, I don't know if he's German, what's his name? Psychologist that talked about narcissists.
Vanken.
He said that, He said that that narcissists are sexually attracted to themselves, and but they will bring around people around them who are attractive to others.
Because it's a reflection of themselves.
Because it's a reflection of themselves. But it's actually just almost like a masturbatory relationship.
You've heard these girls on the internet, right? I only have beautiful friends. I only surround myself around beautiful people. And I will only have a beautiful boyfriend. You've heard them. Like, they're these people exist.
Yeah.
They are saying the quiet part out loud. You're not supposed to say it.
Right.
But they'll just say it. Like, I will only have beautiful friends.
So what's very interesting is that I believe Donald Trump fits right into that. That his attraction to women isn't necessarily to women, but it's a self-attraction to himself. And that the hallmark of that are these repeated relationships that do not have depth. As somebody put it about Trump, and this is not to put him down, this is to do a psychological analysis. And actually, when I put him in this category, I actually have a little more hope for him. Because I think that his narcissism was created as a child as a self-protective mechanism. And if we look at it from a very almost platonic way, like, I'm not going to make judgment on whether Trump is good or bad, but I am going to make judgment on his actions being harmful, helpful, or selfish, or even self-aggrandizement, or just underappreciating other people. So if you've had these three wives and many, 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 many girlfriends, and he has this idea of this, of he's got a grandiose personality. And guys, when he says everything is huge, everything is great, and a lot of people are now wondering, where are the $2,000, you know, where there was supposed to be Doge checks, and then there was supposed to be tariff checks, and then he was supposed to fix the credit card interest rates by today. Somebody posted a video of him saying that he was going to cut your electricity bills in half. The one thing about a narcissist is that they don't lie more than other people. I don't believe that Donald Trump sets out to lie. And that is a quintessential mark of a narcissist. And we can all tell when somebody is lying.
But it's not to say that they don't lie at all.
No, it's not to say that they don't lie.
It's just
at
that
all.
They're not more prone to lying than you or I.
And they're not set, like a psychopath sets out to plot and plan.
All they do is lie.
And really, you know, take advantage of people. Whereas Donald Trump is the quintessential, I'm going to keep saying that, opportunist, right?
And they make promises fully intending.
So he can have China at his seat and truly intend to be great to China. And he can have Russia in his seat and truly intend to be great to Russia. And he can truly, you know, when he was asked about the stimulus checks, and he's like, did I do that? Did I say that? Oh, well, I did the military. Well, I could do it. Let's do it. You know, it sounds just like my dad. Like, did I promise you that? Did I? Okay. Well, maybe I'll do it. Maybe I could do it. And that's kind of like this thought process that Donald Trump has. And where did it come from? Well, his niece, Mary Trump, and I haven't been able to corroborate this part, calls her grandfather, Fred Trump, a sociopath. And wow. So I looked into some of his past, and he did lie a lot.
Oh, really?
So did you know that Trump's last name has an F on it?
Oh, that would make more sense. Trump.
This is German.
Yeah, sure. Trump.
But he wanted to, Frederick Trump.
Trump.
Trump. His grandfather mm-hmm. came over from Germany, but they dropped the F and told everybody they were Swedish.
You're kidding.
And even in The Art of the Deal in 1987, Trump said he was Swedish.
Nuh-uh.
He simply walked it back.
Yeah.
His grandfather came from Germany.
Okay.
But he didn't want to be seen as a Nazi.
Okay, sure. That makes sense. I get it.
And he wanted to...
decided to, like, look into the fact that Trump is not a Swedish last name?
but Trump with an F is definitely German.
Oh, sure.
Trump.
Trump.
So Trump doesn't even look Swedish, but I guess he could pass for it. Germans can definitely pass for Swedes. But anyways, that's a pretty big lie. And for your whole family to continue it.
However, a lot of people changed the spelling of their last name when they got to America, especially through Ellis Island.
Especially Germans.
Because of that. Mm-hmm. And also just trying to simplify. They're trying to start a new life. They wanted to Americanize, you know. So the changing of the spelling of the last name is probably not what Leah's emphasizing here. It's the lying about being Swedish.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So you know all the stuff that's happening in Minnesota?
Our dear friend, Mike Lindell. I was talking to Renee from Vocal Social today. That's Mike Lindell's Facebook, which is such a phenomenal platform. We are live streaming there right now as we speak. You know what she tells me? Mike's running for governor of Minnesota. I'm going to let Leah get to her thing. I could not wait to tell you guys that there's hope for Minnesota yet. Now, I'm not saying that he stands a good chance as a Republican. I think he stands a good chance of becoming the Republican nominee. I'm not saying that a Republican stands a good chance in Minnesota, obviously. But God.
Yeah, we'll pray for that.
Pray for Mike.
Well, it turns out that Fred Trump pulled a few Minnesotan Somalian things when he had some government contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So he would rent his own equipment to himself.
No, he didn't.
And then overcharge the government. Yeah. So there were some tax issues that he had. There was, it's very interesting, Fred Trump's business, his operanda of business was a little Somali-ish, okay? So with that, those are facts on the ground, which lend to the killer mentality that he instilled in his children.
Okay.
Now, again, I'm not taking the word of just radical lefties who do not like Trump. Okay, let me be clear. However, if I'm trying to understand Donald Trump, you're going to have me be a little bit more sympathetic if I believe, which I now do, that Trump's upbringing created in him a mechanism of resilience
and self-preservation.
And self-preservation that actually masked itself as self-promotion.
Ooh, that's good, Leah.
So then when you're talking about the Bible, mm-hmm. that you go over to the sociopath, and God says about the sociopath and the psychopath,
they are without feeling.
They have given themselves over to their own lusts.
Yeah.
They deny God. They are full of hatred and envy and vice and all manner of horrible things. I believe that God in the Bible there is describing a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
I think that narcissists are not necessarily without feeling, even though they don't exhibit feeling. They have buried feelings, and that we can work with them. And I do believe that even a psychopath may be turned around, but it's very interesting when you read Romans chapter 1 and you talk about like maybe a psychopath or sociopath, it doesn't really say it pray for them, witness to them. It says their end is will meet them where they need to be. Their end is their destruction. It doesn't say pray for them. It doesn't say witness to them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to put like psychopaths into that kind of, and I'm full blown psychopaths in that category.
So it actually tells you to have literally nothing to do with these people. Nothing. Doesn't say get them saved. Doesn't say minister to them. Doesn't say cast the devil out of them. It literally says have nothing to do with what? The unfruitful works of darkness.
We're talking about darkness.
Now, I would like to do a really fun plug.
Okay.
Speaking of plugs, hair plugs, it's just a joke. So what it's reminding me of is we have the hair oil, the hair growth serum. And this is what I tell people. Your hair follicles are not dead when you lose your hair, which you would think it feels like they are. It just feels like they are dead. This is a scientific definition. They're asleep. And unless they get awakened, they'll stay asleep. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you look at any bald person, even male pattern baldness, I'm not saying that our hair oil can cure that, but it all can be cured. Ours, I'm not claiming that for ours, by reawakening the hair follicles. They're not, it's literally the scripture in the Bible. He's not dead, he's just sleeping. Okay, that those are your hair follicles. That is what a narcissist's emotions are. A psychopath's emotions are dead. Okay, the sociopath's emotions are dead. God can resurrect them. It's not that it can't be brought back to life, but there is a difference between he's not dead but sleeping and he's dead but we're going to raise him from the dead. Uh-huh. Okay, so these emotions that you're talking about within a narcissist, they are asleep, mm-hmm. which is actually very, very hopeful. Now, they may not allow you to help wake them up. The narcissist may not let you in or let anybody in to help wake up those emotions. But if they are willing, tonight we're going to get into some of these things that can help you to awaken. And especially, here's the deal. How to not be a narcissist, what we should have put at the start of the show is, but it doesn't sound as good, how to not have narcissistic tendencies. You're not a narcissist. Most of you are not an actual clinical, a lot of you are subclinical narcissists, okay? You're just below the... But we all have narcissistic tendencies, and that's the point. Okay, so if we have narcissistic tendencies, and this I want to prove to you, I'm gonna toss Leah's show back to her, and I'm so sorry I've taken over your show. All right, you guys, we've run out of time over here on Faith and Freedom TV. So in order to find out what I was gonna say next, you have to go to resistancechicks.com. But there's two or almost three more hours of tonight's episode, which you don't want to miss, and you can tune that over at resistancechicks.com. And don't forget, our calendars are in stock. You can go to shop.resistancechicks.com and get our Homesteaders Almanac. And please don't forget to use promo code B2T at the checkout to save 10%. We love you, God.